From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. More Idaho Matters right now. New York Times bestselling author Stephanie Dre is back with a look at one of the most influential figures of the 20th century, but you actually might not know who she is. We're lucky to have Stephanie joining us today to talk more about her new book, Becoming Madam Secretary. Stephanie, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Okay, so this latest book is about Frances Perkins. She was the first female U.S. cabinet member and the architect of Social Security, which I had no idea about. So tell us a little bit about her, because once again, here is this historical figure that I think a lot of people don't even know about.
I would love to talk about her because, in my opinion, Frances Perkins wasn't just an influential person. She was the most important woman in American history. And I know that's a big claim, but I will die on this hill. And I think that when people read this book, they will agree with me, and they're going to come up on that hill and mount the cannons too, because Frances Perkins has a legacy that comes down to us and influences the life of every single American alive today. Not just in terms of Social Security, which is a mammoth accomplishment, but in so many little ways. If a listener looks up right now and sees a fire sprinkler overhead at their workplace, they can thank Frances Perkins for that. If they had a weekend, if they enjoyed a meal at a restaurant that didn't have rat droppings in it, they can thank Frances Perkins. If they got to go to school instead of working in a factory as a child, they can thank Frances Perkins for that too. Our entire century has been shaped by her, and it is a shame that people don't remember her better. But I think I know why that is. And I think it's because Frances was so private about her life that people had no idea about the personal struggles that she was overcoming while trying to help the nation. And so my book is really designed to get behind the curtain and to speculate about her private life and to bring some of those struggles to light.
So before we get into her personal life, let's talk a little bit more about, you know, her political life. So, you know, you say she was FDR's first lieutenant, right? I mean, first female U.S. cabinet member. And you just talked about all of these things that she did. What's interesting to me is the fact that here is a woman in the 1930s who has the ear of the U.S. president, but is also a woman and is holding this high position. I mean, politics in so many ways still feels like a very male dominated world, even in 2024. So how in the world did Frances elevate to the level that she did?
I'm so glad that you asked, because people might assume that she got there because of a relationship with Eleanor Roosevelt. That's sort of a boomer that goes around. And it's really not true at all. In fact, Frances's career goes way back. She knew Franklin Delano Roosevelt. They actually met in 1910 when she was already an accomplished social worker. She was going to school for her master's degree at what is now Columbia University. And she was working on a study about malnourished children and how to improve life for kids in the tenements. So they had known each other for a very long time. And one of the things that I find very amusing is that she did not think much of FDR when she first met him. She thought he was a snobby, arrogant dilettante, and he probably thought of her the way that some contemporaries did, that she was a stuffy, insufferable reformer. And yet the two of them ended up having a lot in common, including a great sense of humor. And so over the years, they started to become friends, and they had to work together, and they kept crossing paths, and they forged a relationship that changed the country. And that was just beautiful to me.
Well, and I think it's so interesting too, because especially the times, right? And here you have this male U.S. president, and not only, I mean, as you mentioned, you know, his wife Eleanor, who we know that he also would talk with, and she was very influential. But now we're learning about Francis Perkins, who also held his ear. What do you think that says for also FDR and his relationship, his you know, professional relationship with Francis, that he was willing to listen to women? And I only say that because truly at the times that this was set in.
Yes. I think FDR, you know, there are biographers who've gone very deep into psychology on this issue, in that he had a very formidable mother. And so they posit that he might have been sort of predisposed to pay attention to women in a way that other men might not. But I don't know that we can lay it all at her feet. I think that he did have a sensitivity to women. He did value them and trust them. Thanks to his polio illness, he had to depend on women for a lot of things. And I think that impacted him. He was a proud man, but he had to learn some humility. Now, another thing that I think figures into this, and him trusting Francis in the cabinet, is maybe a little less flattering. And that is that even though he had many other lieutenants in his cabinet, he had at least three other very prominent cabinet members that he leaned on, Francis was the only one that he knew, without a doubt, had zero presidential ambitions, that he could trust her completely, and that she would never stab him in the back for any reason. She was a true believer. So he did trust her, I think, more than the men in his cabinet. And there is sort of a funny excerpt from Harold Ickes's diary. He was another cabinet member, and he wrote something sort of snotty like, well, you know, Frances Perkins went off in the cabinet today lecturing like she always does, and none of us were listening except the president, who always listens to her.
Boo-hoo. So let's turn and talk more about Francis's personal life, as you mentioned in the beginning of our conversation. Because like so many women, I mean, even today, right? She is juggling a lot, a job, a very high level job, a marriage, motherhood. And then of course, criticism for all of her choices, because we still get criticized for all of our choices even today. But how does that, and I know this is a work of fiction, and as you said, you wanted to kind of, you know, go behind the veil and kind of see what all of that was about. But were you able to take from her, truly her personal life, to kind of expand on this?
Yes, because we know that Francis, in addition to having to juggle all of these various roles, there is a record of something even more challenging that she was facing that hopefully most of us will not. And that is that her husband suffered from what we now would refer to as bipolar disorder. There was no treatment for it at the time, and he was very ill. So this was something that had to be kept secret for his protection and for the family's privacy. And it was really devastating for Frances. She had married a brilliant man who was her equal in every way, who then became very confused and dependent, and she had to institutionalize him. And one of the sort of real tragic stories is that on the very day that Francis was present for the signing of the Social Security Act, the largest accomplishment of her life, her husband escaped from his facility. And so in all the pictures, you see this look on her face of utter stress and anxiety, because she really wants to get out of there so that she can go find her husband before anything happens to him.
How do you think that then ultimately played into the rest of her life, her political life, her professional, her personal life? Because that is something so difficult, I think, even with treatment in this day and age, though, right? And yeah. and having a loved one struggling with a mental health crisis.
Yes, I think that for Frances, it brought out a lot of feelings of guilt. She always felt torn between her duties to her family and her duties to the country. And she tried to resign many times. She did not like the limelight. She was not a glory seeker in any way, but she felt as if she was uniquely positioned to fix the nation, to help rebuild the nation from the ravages of the Great Depression and the Second World War. And so with that sort of knowledge that she was in a position that maybe other people could not take over for her, she felt so under the gun, and she felt as if she had to do this for a greater good, that God had called her to do this for the nation. But did that mean that she was sacrificing her husband and her young daughter on the altar of public service? And I don't think she ever really reconciled that.
What are you hoping people take away when they read this book?
I hope that people take away, first of all, that there should be a park or a street named after Frances Perkins in every town in this nation. But also, I hope that they take away from it the fact that women have always been a huge part of shaping our country, that they had to fight for the rights that we enjoy today, and that we have a responsibility to pick up the torch and move things forward, carry on their legacy.
One last question for you. Do you think if Frances had come of age, maybe in a different time, she would have aspired to the presidency?
Oh, that's a question no one has ever asked me. I think I'm going to say no, because I don't think she had ambitions that way. I don't think she had the ruthlessness that is really sort of required for the job sometimes. And she really preferred to stay behind the shadows and do her work without having to play to the camera, so to speak. So I think no, I don't think she would have run.
Well, I want to thank you so much for taking time today to talk to us and to let us go behind the curtain and know about Frances Perkins and really, as you said, how she has shaped our country. So I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I had a great time.
We've been talking with New York Times bestselling author Stephanie Dre about her newest book, Becoming Madam Secretary. It is out right now. Go read it. Grab a copy of it. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.